How many people here love to wait? No hands? It just, that's not what you look forward to in any given day or any given week, waiting. I had an experience yesterday that God allowed me to see how much trouble I have with waiting. I was at the car wash, and there were three or four rental trucks where they had to do an absolute deep clean in their vehicles before they returned them. And as a result, I waited for nearly an hour before one of the bays opened. And then finally, they said to me and to the car behind me, "You guys can go in ahead of us because we're going to be a while." Duh. But as I was sitting there waiting, not very patiently, I was reflecting on what it means to wait. To wait on the Lord, to wait for His answer, to wait for people to respond, just to wait. This morning, I'd like to talk about the prodigal's father. I don't want to speak about the prodigal son, because I think that in some respects, that misses some of the point of the story. It's found in Luke 15. I won't be going through it verse by verse, but I will be talking about each section and some reflections on it. Some of these are guided by a writer named Wayne Jacobson. It starts off in the first couple of verses of that chapter, and so that's important to see because we want to understand whom it is he is addressing. Now the tax collectors and sinners were gathering around to hear him. That's the audience. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law were obviously there because they muttered. What a wonderful word, mutter. It's almost as good as murmur. They were muttering, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." And so Jesus told them a series of three parables about lost things, about the lost sheep, about the lost coin, and then about the lost son. And we pick up the story again in verse 11. "There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, 'Father, give me my share of the estate.' So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had and set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. He even longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.' So he got up and he went to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. The son began his penitent speech. 'Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to the servants, 'Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fatted calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. If you can hear somebody dancing, I suspect it might be Baptists, because Baptists don't dance all that well, and when they do, they make a lot of noise, falling all over themselves. But I digress. When he came near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fatted calf, because he has him back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went out and pleaded with him, but he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. But with this son of yours who squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you killed the fatted calf for him." "My son," he said, "you are always with me. All that I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." As important as the younger son's chagrin and repentance after he had blown his whole inheritance and coming back humbly, just asking for a job, asking to be treated like a slave, that whole response is worth looking at. The older son's response is also worth looking at because he did everything right by the book. And yet, when his father showed grace to the younger brother, he reacted to that very badly. But I'd like to focus on the response of the father. This is a father like no other. And Jesus was clearly speaking of identifiable groups: the sinners and the tax collectors as one group, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law as another group, and his own heavenly Father. And that's why I believe the focus needs to be on Dad. Brendan Manning says, "If we take all the goodness and wisdom and compassion of the best mothers and fathers who have ever lived, they would all only be a faint shadow of the love and mercy in the heart of the redeeming God." As I mentioned, Jesus told this parable to a crowd that included tax collectors, sinners, Pharisees, and teachers of the law. He'd obviously heard this muttering, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." So this is the third of the three lost stories. Let's put ourselves in the sandal of the young man for a minute. He wanted his share of the inheritance. Presumably it was a considerable inheritance because he went to a far land. He stayed there for quite a while. It took him some time to run out of money. Was he delighted that he was finally free of the constraints of parental authority and the hard work of the farm? We aren't told some of those things, and it's not my point to speculate on that, but he found himself free from any constraints with more than enough money to last him probably for a lifetime if he had managed it well. And he went to find himself. I'm not sure if he was going to find himself or going to express himself, but he was gone. And he found himself in a world with all kinds of opportunities, positive and negative. It would seem that he intended to live his life in a riotous lifestyle. But all didn't go exactly as planned. How quickly did his excessive pleasures devour his money? And then, when a famine hit the land, he had to use what was left just to squeak by. And even as that ran out, he basically had to sell himself as a servant or a slave to a master who fed his livestock better than his servants. You got to think about this for a minute. Jesus is talking primarily to Jews. Pigs are unclean. They weren't supposed to eat them. They weren't supposed to herd them. They weren't supposed to have anything to do with them. Levitical law had some pretty strict regulations in terms of what to do if you did touch this stuff. And here he was, a formerly, at least, self-respecting Jew, feeding pigs. And the Bible even says he found himself coveting even that pig slop. And only then, when he had reached the very end of his resources and endurance and all of his self-sufficiency was depleted, then he thought about home again. He didn't loathe the idea any longer. In fact, he longed for home. He knew he would have been better off at home than he was here. And he must have wondered, is it possible to go back home? Can that bridge be rebuilt? Can I go back up that road that I ran down? A lot of pastors focus on the prodigal son because it's easy to identify with him. All of us, to some degree or another, have wandered. I'm not sure if that's the best word, but we struggle with this temptation of living for ourselves, living by our own pursuits and our own ambitions and our own objectives, selfish and self-sufficient. And most, if not all of us, have come to some realization along life's way that that's not the way to live, and we have returned to the Father, and we have received the kind of greeting that the younger son received at the hands of his own earthly father. And remember, this is a parable. It is a story. It is not a relating of a factual event, but it's very true to life with a very poignant point. But he was one of two brothers. Both of these brothers, I would like to suggest, are dealing with estrangement from their father in one way or another. But the central figure is the father. And that's why I've called him the prodigal's father, because even the one that didn't run away was still a prodigal. He just hadn't left physically. But mentally, he may well have checked out. This story paints a portrait of a father like no father you've ever known. In fact, it's painting a picture of the Heavenly Father. First of all, let me ask you a question. Are you surprised or even shocked at this father's actions, this one of the story? If you put some of this into context, his son dishonors him by asking for his inheritance while his father is still alive. Essentially, he's kind of implying that he wished his father was dead so that that money would be freed up to him. What kind of son demands that? Tells us a little bit about his character even before he left home. What about the father's response to him, though? That defies understanding. He gives in. He says, okay, you'll get what is coming to you. And so he divided the inheritance. The way it was divided, according to Levitical law, was that 2/3 of the inheritance, the biggest portion, went to the older son, and 1/3, or half of the older brother's share, went to the younger. In this case, it would be divided up even more complexly if there were other children, but this guy had 2 sons. And we know the story. We've just read it. The son squanders in his inheritance. Everything that his father would have frowned on, everything that his community and his people would have frowned on or condemned him for, that was what he went to live for. He didn't manage it. In the meanwhile, the father is not recorded to have had any interaction with him. No nagging, no prodding, no "hope you're having a nice time, wish you were here." No postcards, nothing like that. So the father sits by and waits while all of this is unfolding. Maybe he heard. The story doesn't give us that detail. What we do know is that he loses it all. I don't even think it was in unwise investments. It was just wild living. The father doesn't try to rescue him. He waits. I walked into the car wash a couple of times checking out what was going on. I was very tempted to ask if they were allowing the trucks to drip dry. I wasn't waiting well. But this father waited and waited. Does indicate that it was years, because the older brother says later, "I've slaved for you for all of these years and you've not given me anything." But I'll get to him in a minute. Where is this father? He's not out looking for him. He's not trying to track him down. He's back on the farm, waiting. He doesn't chase after his foolish son, nor does he rush off to buy him dinner when famine hits. We have grown kids. They may not be in the middle of a famine, but they have little enough to eat sometimes. They're adult kids that are struggling with life and becoming adults. We tend to jump in and rescue when we can. This father didn't. He waits. You start to wonder about this father. Is he indifferent? Could he care less? What is it? We who have children that are growing into adulthood or are adults, we watch them. Sometimes they make choices we wouldn't have made for them. And waiting and biding your time, keeping quiet when quiet is necessary, that's a lot more difficult than tracking them down and saying, "You know, life would go easier if you would learn this lesson, or if you would treat people that way, or if your expectations were this instead of that." Father didn't do any of those things. He waited. He waited for his son to come to his senses. But it wasn't just passive waiting. Of course, he would have continued to operate the farm and work together with his older son. But it was expectant waiting. The implication in the story is that it is years later, and the father spots him while he's still a long way off. A long way off. I've not actually tested this, but I'm reminded of a story of when I was a young boy, 11 or 12 years old, and it was summertime, and I hadn't seen my friend for a while, and I thought I saw him from a distance. It was probably about the length of a football field. And so I kept calling him. His name was Baxter, his last name. And so I called out, "Hey, Baxter, come on over, join us." And this fellow never did. He looked at us, he heard us, he heard me, but he didn't come. And later he said, I thought you were calling me something other than Baxter. And he didn't come. The point is, he was a long way off, and I didn't quite recognize him. So how close this guy had to be, whether he recognized, well, he wouldn't have had an entourage anymore. He came back alone and humbled. 100 yards off, somewhere down the road, maybe he had a cloak, a robe that he had been wearing when he left home. I don't know. But the father saw him from afar. The father had to have been looking continuously, hoping against hope that this dear beloved son of his would return. Perhaps one eye on his work, one eye on the road. Then he saw him. And even though the boy must have been emancipated, hungry, hunched over, humiliated, he says, "That's my boy." Now, here's where some of his response gets even more surprising and shocking. "Well, son, have you learned your lesson?" It's probably the way that I would react. I would hope a little more graciously than that, but that's not the posture of the father here. He didn't wait for the son to make that long, quote, walk of shame all the way to the house, only to fall down in the dirt and grovel for his next meal. He obviously hadn't researched or rehearsed his "I hope you learned your lesson, son" speech. No. This father runs down the road. Remember, the way that they were dressed, if they had any kind of pant or legging, and it's unlikely they did, he would have been in a cloak and a robe. You ever tried to throw on a robe in a hurry because you heard the phone ring in the shower, and then you tried to run and grab it before it hung up? I'm probably talking to people that are old enough to remember rotary dial phones that were fixed in one place in the house. Not very easy to run with long garments on. What they often did, in fact, this is a picture that is of Peter when he jumped out of the boat and ran to Jesus on the shore. They would have taken the ends of their robes, shoved them into their waistband, their rope or belt of some sort, and then they would have run. It's where the term "gird up your loins" comes from. And the father did that. Remember that it was dishonorable for an older man to run, to show his legs. When I was 26, I was in Africa with my father-in-law, and the president of the country came to Niger. And even though I was no Zacchaeus, I was as tall or taller than most of the people around, I couldn't get a very good view. And so I climbed up a tree, not a sycamore, to try and see the president, get a little better view. Some of the Africans around looked at me and said, apparently, because Dad was translating, and I had to trust his understanding of Hausa and translating it to English, "Oh, there's the little Mollum, the little teacher. He doesn't have the dignity that the older Mollum, the real teacher has." I learned a little bit about dignity and about how they accord respect to older men, older teachers, and not so much respect for a younger teacher that didn't have the same sense of dignity or decorum. It was dishonorable for me to climb the tree. It was dishonorable for this older man, disrespectful, to run at all, let alone to show his legs. But he demonstrated his love by sacrificing his own dignity in deference to his son and to his emotions and feelings for him. He hiked up his robes and he hurried down the road as fast as he could run. Now, again, put yourself in the sandals of the younger son. What are you thinking of the Father is bearing down on you. Is he joyful? Is he angry? What's the deal? I'm not expecting this of my Father. He's coming running toward me. I better run through that speech one more time, and even before he gets to me to hit me or do whatever he's going to do to me, I'll get some of my speech out. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men. What does Dad do? He reaches his son. He swallows up the words of the speech with hugs and kisses of delight. No anger from the Father, nor would he talk about his offer to be his servant. He was overcome with joy. His beloved son has found his way home. The servants arrive. Maybe they chased after the father, anxious to see what he would do with this selfish son, quick to pick him up if he stumbled over his robes. Would they get in on the last of the berating that the father was sure to give to his younger son? They were in for quite a shock. They arrived on a planning party for a festival of celebration. The father said, get a robe, get the best robe, get a ring, get a new pair of sandals. These are all things that are never offered to a slave or a servant. Stoke up the barbecue, get the fatted calf, let's celebrate.